Good evening. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this evening Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin, who has a fascinating story to tell. We're going to be talking about a book called Without Smoking Gun. It's the story of the strange death of Lieutenant Commander Pitzer, and of course Lieutenant Commander Pitzer had some information about the murder, about the assassination, about the coup d'etat associated with the murder of President Kennedy. Well, you're going to find this is a very unusual story. Actually, Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin was trained to be an assassin. He attended a special school put on by the special forces, and well, I'm going to give him the opportunity to tell the story. He does far better than I do. Colonel Marvin, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Top of the evening. I feel blessed to be on your station.
Why don't you sort of give our listeners just a little bit of of your background? Now, they don't know who you are. You haven't, I don't believe, been on this network before, but you've been on with me many times in my afternoon and even my morning programs. But I wanted my evening listeners to hear you and hear your amazing story. So why don't you give us the background?
Okay, Doctor. I enlisted in the United States Army in June of 1952, and I rose through the ranks, went to NCO school, was actually an acting sergeant first class and getting paid as a PFC during the Korean War when they just didn't have the money to give you the pay raise that you were due, but we didn't care. We were serving our country, and that was the main thing. And then I got commissioned, went through OCS. And then later on, I got out of the Army and got a direct commission. And I always liked excitement and danger. And so I went airborne in 1956. And from there, went overseas and back. And the day that President Kennedy was assassinated, I was at Yuma Proving Ground in Arizona in a parachute testing facility, which is kind of an exciting thing. And his being assassinated really got to me because my best friend, Master Sergeant Gerard V. Parmentier, loved President Kennedy. He's the one that authorized the Green Beret. Jerry had been in the Green Berets for a while. That's the day I volunteered to be a Green Beret. And that's the day that my life changed, really. I went to Green Beret training within a couple of months, and in April of 1964, I graduated from Special Forces Officers Training. And part of that training was in a special building in Smoke Bomb Hill at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. It was a wooden, old wooden classroom building, but had barbed wire fence around it and a couple guard dogs. And in that building, they taught assassination training, terrorist activities, and sabotage. The officers were taught by CIA people, assisted by experienced Green Berets, and the enlisted men. And what's beautiful about this book, Without Smoking Gun, that Kent Heiner wrote, he went to a lot of trouble to get some other Green Berets to come out in the open with the truth. And in fact, within the book, within the pages of Without Smoking Gun, it tells about retired Colonel James, we call him Bo Greitz, who actually was a trainer.
Hold that thought for just a minute. Go right ahead now. We had a break with our stations. Go ahead.
Oh, I didn't know.
No, that's
that.
That's all right.
I didn't hear any music.
No, I know you didn't. That was because the producer wasn't doing a very good job. I'm the producer too. Go right
ahead.
Where
did I lose you?
No, you didn't. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So it's about Colonel James Bo Greitz, who actually trained the enlisted men in assassination techniques. And that what a beautiful thing that was for me, for him to come out in the open. Also, by the way, and I don't think you know this, it's not in this book, Dr. Stan, but I just got word just yesterday, actually, from Jerry Wilsey, who's a retired Master Sergeant Green Beret, who was in the 6th Special Forces in 1966 and was on the same team that I was in at the beginning of. I was the first Special Forces man to actually command an atomic weapons team, portable atomic demolition team. So there's a number of people now that are coming out to tell about the truth of some of the things that were involved in. Now, the Green Berets are the best men that we've got in the United States Army, trained for all kinds of combat and counterterrorism and all that. The problem is that within the leadership of the military and our government, politicians, there are some evil people that use these well-trained people for other than what they should be used for. 1965, for example, the first week of August, a CIA agent came to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Colonel C.W. Patton, who was our commanding officer of the 6th Special Forces Group, called me up to his office and said, there's one of the company men, that's what we call it, the company, CIA, waiting out under the pine trees to talk to you. And I went out there. There was another captain with me. We separated when he called one of us forward, which happened to be me, and he asked me if I would volunteer, and I must impress your listeners with the fact that all covert operations are volunteer operations. They cannot order you to do something, especially something that's illegal, like murdering somebody. But so they're all volunteer. And they're all under what they call the compartmentalized concept, where your immediate commanding officer doesn't really know what you're doing. There's a skip in command, so there can be denial there. Anyway, he asked me
Hold that thought right there as our stations come back with us. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening, Lieutenant Colonel Dan Marvin. He was trained as a Green Beret. He went to assassin school. And apparently at that time, Lieutenant Colonel Bo Greitz, or at least he's Lieutenant Colonel today, at that time, he was training the enlisted men in assassination techniques. And they actually taught people how to be assassins. Now, this was a voluntary situation. You weren't automatically sent to assassin school, but when you went there, and of course, Colonel Marvin has told me on other programs that one of the things that really impressed him as he was being talked to by these people in the CIA, there seemed to be little question at all that the Special Forces and the CIA had been involved with the assassination of President Kennedy. Now, this was when 1964 that you were in?
1964, right.
Am I correct that they inferred that they were involved in the Kennedy assassination?
the CIA was involved in it along with the mafia.
Right.
Both the U.S. mafia and the Corsican mafia.
And they brought this out quite openly because, of course, they never anticipated that anybody from the assassin school would ever talk about it. Would that
That's
be a correct assumption?
That is a correct assumption.
All right. And then when you, of course, got through with finished your training, you were approached by somebody. You were sent to see somebody from the CIA. They asked you see you independently and asked if you would volunteer to kill somebody that they said was a bad person.
It was
a traitor. Country.
Yeah, it was about a traitor who was about to give secrets to the enemy, is what they said.
All right, fine. Why don't you pick up the story from there?
He asked me if I'd volunteer to kill the traitor who would was going about to give secrets to the enemy. What I didn't know at the time was the enemy was us. And I said certainly. And I assumed when I said certainly that it was an overseas assignment. I was already on orders to go to Vietnam to the 5th Special Forces group there. And the way it would work, we normally only did these kind of things overseas. So I'd report to the 5th Special Forces group, then they'd drop me from the rolls, and I'd go do the job that I was asked to do, and then if and when I made it back, then I'd be picked back up again in the rolls. If not, I would be treated as a deserter if I didn't make it back. It was all very highly classified and all volunteer. So I asked him, where it was and who it was, and he said it was Lieutenant Commander William Bruce Pitcher, and it'd be at the Bethesda Naval Hospital in that area. And I said, no, I won't do that. I said, I've got a wife and three children. I never anticipated you asking me to do that kind of a job here in the United States, and I can't do it. I had to get somebody else. I said, normally you folks use the mafia to do that. He didn't answer me when I said that.
And of course, in the United States, the CIA used the mafia overseas.
Yeah.
They used the special forces, but here they wanted to use the special forces to take out an American military officer. But you were told, of course, he was a traitor. He was going to give the secrets to the enemy. But of course, really, he was going to reveal what he knew about the assassination of President Kennedy. Was that a fair statement?
That's
at least
a
in your
fair
estimation.
Statement. The secrets that he had were the actual photographs. He took the photos, the movie, and the still photos of the autopsy of President John F. Kennedy. Dennis David, who is also talks about him in this book, he was a Navy officer. He actually stood next to William Bruce Pitcher in his office and saw those films. And he's willing to go before Congress. I'm willing to go before Congress. We have volunteered through senators and congressmen to the Assassination Records Review Board, and they absolutely refused to swear us as witnesses and take our testimony.
Well, of course, but they have actually threatened you. Haven't they actually threatened your family and your grandchildren for daring to come forward and tell the truth?
Yes. In fact, a U.S. congressman, senior staffer in Ithaca, New York, called a member of my family and told her, you can tell Colonel Marvin that he may not be afraid of anybody but Jesus Christ. And, that's the only way that I came out with all this is I got saved, and then I didn't fear the government anymore. But you can tell Colonel Marvin to remember that he's got grandchildren.
So this is the sort of thing, this is the reason why so many people will not tell the truth. They're afraid for their families or afraid for their children. And these people are, on the other side, are entirely ruthless. And
that's right.
Certainly anybody who's ever wondered why Jack Ruby was willing to walk into the Parkland, into the police station in Dallas, Texas, and gun down Lee Harvey Oswald, knowing full well that he would be caught. Well, we have a book written by the brother of the head of the mafia, who says, sure, the reason that Ruby did that, Ruby was working for the mafia, and he was told he would be tortured to death, and his whole family would be tortured to death if he didn't do it.
That's
so,
right.
Of course, he did it. And this is the sort of thing that goes on. This is not imaginary. It goes on in America today. And, of course, the book is called Double Cross. It's written by Chuck Giancana. We carry the book. Why? Because we think it's important, because you're not going to hear this mentioned, certainly by Rush Limbaugh, or Bill O'Reilly or Dan Sean Hannity. So pick up the story there, Colonel.
Well, you know, it's so important, Dr. Stan, and the listeners should know this. It's so important that there are people like yourself who are willing to bring people like myself and other people that are willing to tell the truth so that someday we can have a clean, you know, we've got a clean government. We've got the best nation in the world, the best government, the best military, but we got so much evil that's directing things. I honestly feel, and so does all the people that work with me on these different crusades, that since the day Kennedy was assassinated, the President of the United States has not really run the country. There's another group of people, and I'm sure you've got other books that you sell about Skull and Bones and those kind of organizations. But anyway, he asked me, and I told him no once I found out it was in the United States, and then another officer came forward, and whether or not he was involved in it or even talked to him about it, I don't have the least idea. The next thing I heard about William Bruce Pitcher, in 1993 there was a special on television about the Kennedy assassination. At the end of that special, there's a list of 42 names that were rolled across the screen of people that had somehow involved in the Kennedy assassination or the periphery of it, and that had met unusual deaths. William Bruce Pitcher's name was on there. I about got sick to my stomach as I was watching it. I thought, they asked me to kill a naval officer, that was not a spy. And so I set about with some friends of mine to find the widow of William Bruce Pitcher. And sure enough, we finally did. I talked to her. I recorded her conversation. I've given copies of it to the Assassination Records Review Board and congressmen and senators to try and get this testimony before Congress, before the American people. But she told me that the four different Navy officers ordered her to remain silent about her own husband's death.
Now, this was
25 years.
And this was right after he died. She was told
right
to be silent.
Right after he was killed. Right.
And they wouldn't give her they wouldn't allow her see the autopsy report or any other information.
When they finally did, through an attorney that was working more for the bad guys than the good guys, he didn't give her that part of the autopsy which she would have questioned, because the Navy told her that she couldn't have his ring even because his hand was mangled, but the autopsy shows that the hand, there's nothing wrong with either one of his hands.
So they simply lied.
They lied. And what they did is, whoever it was that accepted the mission stayed with him, watched over what he was doing until they discovered where those films were, where that film was hidden. This is what I believe in my heart. Because when he was found dead, he was at the foot of a ladder that was going up to his false ceiling in his office. To me, that's probably where he had the film, because he was going to release it to the public. In fact, he had a job all lined up. He was about to retire, and he was going to be on a TV network, and he was going to release that information. That's why they killed him.
And, of course, he made the mistake of mentioning to other people that he had this film footage and the films, and that is the last thing they wanted, is for the American people to know that the autopsy pictures that they have seen had nothing to do with what really happened. I have a personal interview with, in my first four tape set on the assassination, with Dr. Crenshaw, who was at the hospital in Parkland Hospital in Dallas, Texas, on the day that President Kennedy came in. And the wounds he described were not at all the wounds, of course, that they described at the autopsy at Bethesda. Why? Because, of course, they had to convince the American people the shots came from behind. Rather, the shots really came from in front. But if that was true, then Lee Harvey Oswald didn't do it. and that's why they had to kill Oswald, and then they had to kill Ruby. They have had to kill, well, we have actually a book we used to carry. It's not available now, but it was called The Missing Witnesses. There were 109 people listed there of people who had, knew something about the murder of President Kennedy, the coup d'etat, as it were. And, of course, all of them had met very, very strange deaths.
That's right. Now, they would have been, in fact, right today, Congress could call myself, call Dennis David, call Jimmy Files, who's in Joliet Prison, who's a man that actually shot President Kennedy from the grassy knoll, and your Dr. Crenshaw in and prove the Warren Commission was lying.
No, of course, Dr. Crenshaw has passed away, but we do have an interview with him. I think it's one of the few interviews where he actually tells the story. And when he wrote a book some 20 years later, after first of all being threatened and told he would never practice medicine if he if he came forward with the truth, but when he was getting ready to retire, he wrote a book. He was vilified by the Journal of the American Medical Association. He sued the AMA. They gave him $225,000 to settle it, saying, well, we know we could have won the case, but after all, we didn't want to waste the money going to court, so we just simply gave it to him. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a cover-up.
That's right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin, of course, who's been on the front lines of trying to get the truth out on so many issues. And his is really, truly an amazing story, and the story of Lieutenant Commander William Bruce Spitzer, who actually died under very mysterious circumstances. What did you derive from the autopsy report? Have you? I'm sure you have copies of it, don't you?
Of the autopsy. JFK? No.
No, I'm talking of Commander Pitzer's autopsy.
Oh, Commander Pitzer's, it's a whole strange vehicle of words. It's about a half inch thick altogether, and includes a Navy investigation, a State of Maryland investigation, an FBI investigation, and it all, if you really look at it close, it just proves beyond a doubt that the cards were stacked against Lieutenant Commander Pitzer, and he was killed to get that evidence, no doubt about it. One of the things that's interesting about this whole thing too is how the military trains these people to do these kind of things, and works with the mafia. You still have my book, Expendable Elite, correct?
We do, and we offer that book. That's Expendable Elite. It's a it's Colonel Marvin's story of his experience in this Green Berets. A fascinating book, and we recommend it strongly.
And the there's another book that we're in the process of working up, and it's be called Devious Elite, and it tells about every single covert operation that I've been involved in since I was in the United States Army. Of course, there's no actual assassinations that would be contained in the book because there's no statute of limitations on murder. But one of the interesting things is that in 1964, I was in Natick, Massachusetts with Master Sergeant Joe Hill, and he and I were up there to do the final testing on some top secret testing on Special Forces equipment and doing the jumping with it out near Fort Devens, Massachusetts. But while we were in Natick, we stayed at a motel right next to the laboratories, and Frank Sinatra was singing at that time. Well, you know, when Sinatra was singing any place, the mafia was bound to be there. And we were sitting there. At that time I drank. I haven't drank since 89. And all of a sudden these drinks started coming to the table, and I demanded of the waiter that tell us who was sending them over, and it turned out to be the son of the Don of the mafia in that area. And so we ended out sitting at his table and just relaxing with him and listening to Frank Sinatra. And we kept coming back to Natick to finish the testing. And he took us to his dad's home, and we met the Don of that area mafia. And there's two interesting things we learned from him. Number one, I think I mentioned earlier that I commanded the first atomic demolition munitions team in Special Forces. And our contingency mission was to blow the hydroelectric plant in the Aswan High Dam in Egypt while it was being built by the Russians. But what I didn't know is the intelligence that we were getting so we'd know exactly where to place that bomb, was from a company from that Italian mafia that were hired by the CIA to work with the Russians so they could get the plans for the hydroelectric plant to Fort Bragg to Special Forces for us to use. And after
hold that thought right there, Kirk.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Colonel Marvin was saying that when he was at one time, he was on a special assignment developing some equipment, and in the process, he came in contact with the Don, a unit of the Mafia. What city was that in?
In Natick, Massachusetts.
Oh, in Massachusetts. So this is one of the leaders of the Mafia there.
Well, it's the Boston Mafia.
The Boston Mafia. Okay, right. Why don't you tell the story? You were saying that you learned from him that the plans that the government was using actually know where to place an atomic bomb to blow up the power plant from the Aswan Dam. Now, they never did this, but they had the plans all in place in case it became necessary. They actually came through the Mafia, was that it?
That's right. And interestingly enough, the gentleman that I mentioned earlier, Master Sergeant in Syracuse, New York, he was on that same mission, and they still had the same contingency mission to blow that hydroelectric plant. But then he offered us, he being the Don, offered Joe Hill and I a job to be a hit team for the Mafia, you know, to otherwise go and resign from the Army and work for him. And neither one of us wanted to do that, but because he knew what our training was. And so I asked him, I said, were you involved at all? Did the company ever call you and ask you to be involved in the Kennedy hit? And he said, yes, they did. He said, they called me, but he says, I told them that we don't have any problems with the Kennedys in Massachusetts.
Now, in other words, the CIA was looking around to find out who they could get to help them.
That's right.
If you read the book, Double Cross, which we carry, written by the brother of the head of the Mafia at that time, Y. Sam Giancano, and he was in Chicago, as I remember.
Right.
Why, of course, they quite open about their involvement with, in other words, they didn't do it, but they certainly knew who did it, and they were people working with the Mafia involved in the Kennedy assassination. Did you talk to some people in Florida with the Mafia?
Well, I was just going to bring that up. Captain John McCarthy and his information, some of it is right here in this book, Without Smoking Gun. It's completely separate from the murder of Pitzer, but he knew the man in Miami, Florida, who it was an undercover detective who actually listened in on the conversation between the CIA and the Mafia Don in Miami, and asked him to get Kennedy when he was in Miami, which was before Dallas, and he refused it. There was something bad between the Mafia and the CIA for a short period of time there, and that's why they asked us too later on to kill witnesses.
Okay, so I think that what the average American finds it very difficult to believe is that the CIA actually kills people. I've talked to several other assassins. I know a number of people who've died under very mysterious circumstances, people I've had an opportunity to interview since I've been doing this program, and there's very little doubt in my mind that they were the victims of assassination. Why? Because they had to be silenced because they were telling the truth. One of them was a man named Terry Reid, who wrote a book on Bush and Clinton. And, of course, a man named L.D. Brown was actually recruited to kill Terry Reid. And, of course, L.D. Brown didn't know that. He was told why he was a drug smuggler in Mexico. And he went down there under the auspices of the CIA. And I actually talked to L.D. Brown afterwards, asked him to come on my program. He'd actually done programs telling the truth. He'd written a book about it. By the time I talked to him, he said, I can't do any more interviews on this. I've got to get on with my life. Obviously, that threatened him. That pretty well destroyed him.
Absolutely.
And, of course, we know what happened to Gary Webb recently. Gary Webb, who'd written about the CIA tolerating or working with people who were smuggling drugs. And he recently, within the last month, shot himself twice in the head. in the effort to commit suicide. Right. Twice in the head. I mean, could you imagine shooting yourself twice to commit suicide? Well, if you believe that, ladies and gentlemen, you believe anything. But, of course, we've talked to people who've actually had an inspector or an investigator actually view the body of Gary Webb before the coroner said, oh, no, this is a completely normal. Lots of people shoot themselves in the head twice in the process of committing suicide. This is within the last month, right here in California, in Sacramento. These sort of things go on, and I think the story you're hearing tonight from Colonel, Lieutenant Colonel Dan Marvin, who's been on the front lines of this battle. Go ahead.
I had mentioned Bo Greitz earlier. He is a retired full colonel.
Oh, he's full colonel now.
Right. And are we having a break now?
Yeah, we're going to have a break. We'll be back in just a moment here with Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin. His book, Expendable Elite, it's available from Radio Liberty, as is the book we're talking about, Without Smoking Gun. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, I guess this evening, Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin. Go right ahead, Colonel.
Right. Let me see,
certainly he'd mentioned that Colonel Bo Greitz was a full colonel, and we had been talking, of course, about the situation where you'd actually talked to the mafia there in Florida, and, of course, they would not participate in the assassination of President Kennedy.
I want to tie in something basically more or less along the line of what you were speaking about. If somebody were to go to my website, which is expendableelite.com, and they look on there, you probably read the $1 billion scam. Well, when I reported that information to the FBI, he came to my shop office twice in Ithaca, New York, and the last time he was there more or less to tell me that he wouldn't be able to talk to me again about what I had reported. Well, what had happened, I didn't realize I'd reported about the CIA's involvement and the Department of Justice involvement and the Treasury Department involvement in this $1 billion scam. I didn't realize the FBI was also involved in it.
Now, what was the $1 billion scam?
This is where, and it's still going on, I'm sure. It's where the banks are moving monies back and forth and charging each other interest and then hiding major share of that to use for drug operations and things of that nature, use for illegal operations.
And of course, you know, well, for the people who don't know, the CIA has their own airlines, they have their own banks. They are a separate government, complete unto themselves, and anybody who gets in their way or tries to expose it, why, of course, they can meet a very strange accident of some sort or another. Now, this doesn't mean everybody in the CIA is involved. There are a lot of good people who work in the CIA.
Amen.
But there is a dark side of the CIA.
Just like the FBI. Now, you know, for a long time there, we didn't have hit squads in the FBI, but I was told by somebody who I trust very much inside the FBI that when the current President Bush was elected, his first hitch, they reauthorized the two FBI hit squads. Now, when that FBI agent was in my office, he asked me, because we were talking about the CIA, he says, aren't you afraid that they'll put a bomb under your car? Now, just that in and of itself tell the people a lot, that the FBI agent knew that they could do or would do that sort of thing.
Hold that thought there for just a moment, Colonel. We're going to be bringing our stations from all across America right back online right about now. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is Colonel Daniel Marvin. Colonel, let's get that website out just one more time, please.
ExpendableElite.com. Com.
That's ExpendableElite.com, and Colonel Marvin was talking about when the FBI agent came to his office, and he was telling him about some of the information he had about the involvement of the CIA and high officials in government, and involvement in illegal money laundering and things of that sort. They could use this money for their black operations. And the FBI agent said to Colonel Marvin, aren't you afraid to put a bomb under your car? And, of course, the whole thought was that the FBI realized that this goes on not in the distant past. It goes on in America today.
That's
so
right.
We say how terrible these things are that happen in other countries, but people are killed in America today because, of course, they know too much. They're getting information out. They're being punished because they've exposed the activities of the dark side of government. And there is a dark side of government. And those of you who listen to our program regularly realize, of course, that there has always been a dark side here. Only now that dark side, unfortunately, is in the ascendancy. So go ahead, Colonel.
Yeah, I think that's a big problem, that it is in the ascendancy. Compartmentalization is something that people should understand, too. And the only way that you can continue to conduct these covert operations, like in my book, Expendable Elite, I explain in there how I was ordered to go to Vietnam, and when I reported to Colonel Tuttle, he called me into his office, and he asked me if I would accept the mission of being the first Green Beret team to take the local people across the border into the sanctuaries, to attack the sanctuaries.
Now, this was into Cambodia.
Into Cambodia, right. Yeah. And, you know, I've been trying ever since I got back from there to try and get it, the people of this country to realize that our president and our chief of staff of the United States Army and General William Westmoreland aided and abetted the enemy by allowing them to have sanctuaries inside of Cambodia. But going back to when he asked me, I said, certainly, I'd love to have that command, the top secret operation. And he says, well, when you leave this door, I want you to realize a few things. Number one, it will be as if I never met you and I never talked to you. And if you're caught inside of Cambodia, there'll be no artillery support, no air support, or medevac support. And if you're captured over there, you'll be just dropped as deserters, because it was a highly classified operation. Now, you know, what we should wonder is, why should it be classified for us to go attack the enemy who's been shooting at us? And General Westmoreland, I'll say one thing for him. He admits it in his book. He actually confesses in his book, A Soldier Reports. And I quote him in my book, Expendable Elite. He actually admits that he was ordered not to tell Congress that the enemy had sanctuaries. He was ordered not to tell the American press that the enemy was allowed the use of the Mekong River as their main supply route. And we protected the ships carrying enemy weapons and ammunition into their sanctuary areas inside of Cambodia so they can turn around then and kill us and the people we were there to help.
Well, of course, if they'd allowed the American military to do the job, they could finish the operation, within 6 months. But they wouldn't have been able to drag that long war on for 10 long years. They wouldn't
have been able to
kill as many American boys. They wouldn't have been able to have this as a great distraction. So the American people would not see what was happening here at home as they took God and prayer out of our schools, changed the immigration laws, found a woman had a right to an abortion, centralized all power in Washington, D.C. And if you don't believe that was the real objective of this entire war in Vietnam, you need to read what McGeorge Bundy says in the January 1967 issue of Foreign Affairs magazine, an article entitled The End of Either Or. The last two pages is all you have to read, and if you want the pages, we'll send them to you. And he says it so blatantly. And here's a man, member of Skull and Bones, member of the Council on Foreign Relations, close friend of the former Secretary of the Army, who had actually gotten us involved in World War II, Henry Stimson. Certainly, McGeorge Bundy was head of the National Security Council, the man who got us into the war. And he says very blatantly, the road forward at home is not by getting out of Vietnam. The road forward at home is by persistence in Vietnam. If we were to pull out of Vietnam, there'd be a strong reaction to our domestic policies. And what were those policies? Why, to bring socialism to America. As he says, the great new departures in health and education and welfare. And that was what it was all about. And it was a great diversion, and 58,000 Americans died.
How many Vietnamese?
A million South Vietnamese and 2 million North Vietnamese. And we never, have you ever noticed we never talk about that, Colonel?
No.
We never talk about all the Vietnamese who died?
No. In fact, my book, I think, is the very first book about Vietnam that tells the truth about the courage of the South Vietnamese, tells the truth about our government aiding and abetting the enemy. Now, how the heck can you win a war if you're helping the enemy?
Well, of course, if you're not trying to win the
war, you got it.
Then, of course, you can really understand what's going on. And there were a lot of people over there who realized it make sense. None of it makes sense. Every effort was made to keep us from winning the war, and we can thank Robert McNamara and the dark spiritual forces that he represented. Henry Kissinger, sure. In fact, both Henry Kissinger and McNamara, according to an article in West Magazine, were regular visitors at Marie Strong's occult center in La Boca Grande in Colorado, where the witches and the shamans and all the occult people meet on a regular basis to practice their dark trades. Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz.
Wonderful.
Hi, Mike. Do you have a quick question?
Yeah. Besides ending the Vietnam War, what were the reasons for killing Kennedy? And then I'll hang up and take your answer.
All right, fine.
President Kennedy was going to dissolve the covert operations part of the Central Intelligence Agency. And he was going to be very restrictive of how the unconventional forces, especially his favorite Green Berets, were employed. He believed in doing things above board, which sounds kind of strange, I know, but that's the way he was. In fact, in 1962, I was in Europe, and I was involved in an operation that was all set up to take two teams of Green Berets from the 10th Special Forces Group in Bad Tölz into Poland. And at my secret depot that I was in charge of the storage area at, we stored weapons and ammunition and parachutes and things of that nature. We had it all loaded up on C-130 aircrafts to take these two teams in with enough weapons and ammunition to arm 200 Poles in a top secret operation, and it was President John F. Kennedy himself who sent the message canceling that operation about an hour before it was supposed to take off. There's a lot of those kind of things, and we don't know. You know, I don't know only what I was involved in personally.
Well, I think one reason, of course, that Kennedy had to die was, number one, he was going to print our money with a silver backing. He was not part of the elite. He was not part of the ruling elite. He came from an Irish family that made their money smuggling whiskey during the Prohibition. He wasn't of the elite's concept of with the rest of the people, you know, the high polloi, the Rockefellers,
right.
George Bundys, the Skull and Bones, and the leaders of the CFR.
That's
so,
right.
And not only that, I really believe that he thought he was the President of the United States. He was going to disband the CIA. He was going to do what he thought was best for America. Now, I disagree with many of his policies, but he was simply in the way. But the one thing that they could not forgive him for, at least some of the people in the CIA, was, of course, what happened at the Bay of Pigs. They thought he was responsible. I don't think he made the final decisions. I think the decision was probably made by McGeorge Bundy and the
Arthur
Schlesingers in the world.
Dr. Stan. I knew personally a Green Beret who was with the two teams that went in and helped Castro defeat Batista. And that whole setup over there has been under the CIA control for a long period of time. I think the whole Bay of Pigs thing was a mask to pretend like we wanted to do take Cuba. We could take Cuba anytime we wanted to.
You're absolutely right, and this is what the American people have never been told, is that we never tried to win. That was simply to make the American people think that we were trying to win.
Amen. That's it.
Okay.
And that's why, I mean, why would we be able to have Guantanamo base there?
And why is it that today, if people try to escape from Cuba, why they're picked up by the Coast Guard and they're sent back to Cuba?
Right.
Why is it, of course, we consistently lent money to Russia, and Russia lent money to Fidel Castro right up until 1990 when supposedly the Soviet Union fell? I mean, none of these things really make any sense. Why is Fidel Castro allowed to come to the United States and address the United Nations and go to the meetings of the Council on Foreign Relations and meet with David Rockefeller? There's something wrong in this whole story.
That's right.
When, of course, this wicked communist would meet with the leading capitalist in America, or maybe right. Nothing is what it appears to be.
That's absolutely true.
Well, let's go to Jack, who's calling from Michigan. Jack, do you have a quick question?
Yes, I salute Colonel Marvin for being on the program. I did see him on the History Channel presentation last year.
What, was that the man who killed Kennedy?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Very, very moving. Wondering if Colonel Marvin sees the what I'll call the genocidal police action in Iraq as another Vietnam in the making, and also what would be his thoughts about the 9/11 Twin Towers events, and lastly, what about JFK's son mysteriously going down in that plane?
All right, fine. That's too many questions at one time, but we'll just try to take them one at a time. And I don't know, Colonel, do you want to try to answer any of those?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. First of all, the question then would be Iraq. What do you think about what's going on in Iraq?
Well, when the day that our troops were sent into Iraq, I told my wife and I told the gentlemen who are with me on my crusades that if they were to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, it would be because they carried them in with them. I never, ever believed that even if he had weapons of mass destruction, which he didn't, he had no way of delivering them to affect the United States whatsoever. Affect other Arab countries around him, but that's just about it.
The second question then, of course, would dealt with what did you think about 9/11?
On 9/11, I really don't know that much about it, and I don't like to talk about anything. The thing that affected me the most, and we don't have a television, but our neighbor ran over and after the first tower was hit, and we ran across the road and sat watching their big screen TV, and when I saw those buildings just disintegrate, then I knew that something was wrong. The planes hit the Empire State Building. You remember that, don't you,
sure,
Doctor?
Right.
A long time ago, and that's still standing. There was something inside that building, like I think there was in the Omaha building, that there was explosives in there to cause the structural deterioration that would allow them buildings to just collapse down there like and kill all those people.
Well, I think whatever we think about the Twin Towers, and I tend to agree with you, but certainly there is nobody can explain why Building 7 came down. It was a block and a half away. It wasn't hit by anything. There were some fires in the building, but of course, how did the fire start? And when in all history has a steel-reinforced building come down from the bottom, just the whole bottom of the building just sort of collapses?
Right.
Because there was a fire, either in the basement or up above. That building was brought down by explosives, and you only have to see the pictures of it. And, of course, those explosives had to be put in there beforehand. And if they were put into Building 7, well, how do we know that they weren't put into the other buildings? But there's no question that all of the buildings in that complex were demolished. If you've ever seen the pictures of them, Buildings 3, Buildings 4, Building 5, Building 6, it was almost like somebody had placed an explosive in the middle of each one of those buildings. And there's
a chain reaction.
Right.
You know, it's interesting. The other question, too, could relate to Afghanistan. When our special forces went into Afghanistan, I wrote the current President Bush, and I told him to please set up mechanisms, hoping that he was honorable at the time, that would make certain that these Green Beret teams that are going in to work with warlords, and that's what they did, would make sure that the end result was always kept in mind, and they didn't join and become loyal to the people they were there to bring into a central government. And unfortunately, they didn't do that. And that's one of the reasons why all of a sudden Afghanistan is the biggest drug-producing nation in the world, I think, now.
Isn't it amazing? The Taliban had done away with the drugs, and when we got in there, was suddenly why Afghanistan's back producing drugs. Isn't it amazing, with all the forces we had at our disposal, we never got Osama bin Laden? Anybody else wants to know why? We carry a book called Crude Politics, written by a man who's analyzed what happened in Afghanistan, and he says, you know, people, troops coming back said, we weren't allowed to get Osama bin Laden. We actually have an article we'll be glad to send to any one of our listeners out of the Washington Times, dated October 7th, 2001, where high government officials were quoted as saying, we're not going to Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden. After all, if we got Osama bin Laden, how would we justify this war? If we got Osama bin Laden, how would we justify the war? If you'd like to see that article, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Ask for the Washington Times article on Osama bin Laden. We'll save that for you. We'll get that for you. You have to understand, we never tried to get Osama bin Laden, because after all, if we'd gotten Osama bin Laden, how would we have justified going to war with Iraq? You see,
how long have we been over there in Afghanistan? And what kind of fancy devices do we have, electronic devices, that can locate just about anybody or anything, and he's still alive because we want him to be alive?
Amen to that. Or maybe not alive, but they have created him, and they keep telling us that he's
alive. Well, Noriega's still alive, right. Isn't he?
What?
Noriega's still alive.
Right.
We trained him. Saddam is still alive. We supported him when he was doing his mass killings. People have got to wake up, but it's going to take somebody very strong in Washington, D.C., that's willing to stand up before Congress and get the mechanisms going to straighten this mess out. There's enough of us, I believe, who would come forward if they would just call us forward.
But I don't think they have any intention of calling you. The last thing they want is for the American people to hear the truth. The 911 Commission was a fraud. It was appointed by the president not to reveal but to conceal the truth. And, of course, there are so many people out there who know what happened that day. And, of course, there's no way that they would ever be allowed to tell the truth. I know, because some of them went to one of my friends, Dr. Garth Nicholson. Other went to David Shippers and told him about the attack beforehand. But they were afraid to come forward themselves. And, of course, when we have a situation where the people fear the government, why, of course, we are approaching tyranny. Remember, right. When the government fears the people, then there's freedom. When the people fear the government, there's tyranny. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program with Colonel Daniel Marvin. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and it's been a rapid hour, but it always is when we have Colonel Marvin on. We've got about 3 minutes, Colonel, before we have to wrap up the program. What's the message you'd like to leave with our listeners tonight?
The message that I would like to leave is that they get this book, Without Smoking Gun. There are revelations in there that they just won't believe until they read it. And they see that the trouble that Kent Hiner went to get corroboration, so that there's more than one person saying, hey, there were assassins trained in our own United States Army Special Forces. Oh. He goes into detail that'll have people questioning the Warren Commission without a doubt. And then maybe some of them will join us. Maybe some of those who haven't come forward will come forward. God bless you for carrying this kind of good information on your program.
Well, of course, this is why we do what we do. We have to get the information out, and, of course, the program is being heard. I have about 10 to 15 stations tonight, and on two shortwave frequencies, and on a couple of internets. And so people all across America are already hearing this. Our guest this evening, of course, is Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin. His book, Expendable Elite, and of course his website is expendableelite.com, www.expendabledeleteelite.com. And the book we've been talking about is Without Smoking Gun, Kent Hiner's book, and of course we've had Kent on, and we carry both Expendable Elite and Kent Hiner's book. We think that they are both important. We think that the American people need have the right to know what's really going on.
Amen.
But, of course, the American people aren't going to be concerned. If they think it's somebody else is going to solve this problem for them, I think they're sadly mistaken. I fear, and I wonder what you think about it, Colonel, but I think we've just begun our military escapades over there in the Middle East. I fear that Iran or Syria may well be next. What do you think?
I think they almost have to be, just based on what the president said at his inauguration.
And we are going to bring freedom to the people of the entire world. Well, all I could do is suggest you get hold of Samuel Huntington's wonderful book, The Clash of Civilizations. Certainly, Samuel Huntington's professor of history at the Harvard University. His book is frequently quoted, and if you read his book, you realize that everything we are doing over there is designed to inflame the entire Islamic world against the United States, to continue the war. And my fear is one day there are going to be terrible devastation in America because of it. Colonel Daniel Marvin, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
God bless you and your whole crew up there.
God bless
you, too.
Thank you. We'll be talking again real soon. Thanks.
Okie dokie.
Well, Dr. Stan here, our guest this evening has been Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin, and certainly one of my favorite guests, and I hope he'll be coming back again with us many, many times. We've had him on many of our other programs, but I wanted you to hear his story. His book, Expendable Elite, which we carry, that's Expendable Elite, his stories with the Green Berets, and of course how he was asked to assassinate Prince Sihanouk of Cambodia, involved in the cross-border incidents. And of course, they can't let this information out. That's why they threatened him, they threatened his family, they've had phony lawsuits brought against him to impoverish him, they've done everything to intimidate him, but Colonel Marvin's a very courageous and very, very brave man, and he's doing what's right, trying to reach the American people because he loves this country, and if you love this country, you have an obligation to be involved as well. Now, the other book we've been talking about is Without Smoking Gun by Kent Heiner. That's Without Smoking Gun, and it's available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 or 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, if you have not read some of the other books we've been talking about, Vaccine A, the true story of what happened as far as the Gulf War syndrome is concerned, and how the government has crippled almost half the young men that we sent over to the first Gulf War, and we're putting together a four-tape set on this whole incredible story. That's Vaccine A. It's the true story of the Gulf War illness. The government knows. They just don't want you or the people who are involved to know. And they keep denying there's a problem when they know there's a problem because they really don't care. They're simply cannon fodder. And as you remember, that is the expression that was used by Bertrand Russell on page 50 of his book, The Impact of Science on Society, how we had to breed enough children to have cannon fodder. And then, of course, that statement by Henry Kissinger, quoted on page 194 of a book written by Woodward and Bernstein called The Final Days, where Kissinger referred to our courageous young men as stupid dumb animals to be used for foreign policy affairs. Stupid dumb animals. That's how the elite really feels about people like you and I. And it's about time people begin to get angry and get concerned and join us. Help us to get the truth out. Please go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And of course, you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the internet, on satellite, 4 hours a day on shortwave, or on the radio someplace, 5 hours every day. Certainly tell others about our programs. That's something you can do. Remember, we do carry the Berkey products, and we carry a number of products. We carry tape sets, we carry videos, we carry books. Look at all of those, and you can pull down our programs live on the internet or the archive programs. Your job is to tell other people what's going on. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you begin to understand the real forces that work against this Brotherhood of Darkness. We carry several other excellent books. One of them is called Spiritual Warfare by Tom Horn. Another, The Gods That Walk Among Us by Tom Horn. That's Spiritual Warfare by Tom Horn and The Gods That Walk Among Us by Tom Horn. The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow by Constance Cumby. We'll take you into the secret societies that have here. Every major city in America has a metaphysical bookstore where they sell their books. And yet, of course, you're never going to hear about them, about Helena Petrovna Blavatsky and of course, Annie Besant and all these people in these secret occult organizations in theosophy. You can go up on the internet and look up theosophy or Rosicrucianism. There are secret societies operating right here in America today. Remember the videos, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2? Remember the video, they sold their souls for rock and roll. That's they sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version of that. You need to get this. You need to have your children watch it. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty. For our provision and protection, we'll be back in just a moment for the second hour of Radio Liberty. Good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have Dorothy, is it, how do you pronounce it? Is it CZ?
Cease.
Was it?
Cease, like cease and desist.
See what now?
It's just cease.
Cease, Dorothy Cease. And, of course, she writes for newswithviews.com. That's newswithviews.com. And she obviously has her own website. That's www.tech.com.au. Flag? What is that? Flagship?
It's www.tech.com.au.
Slash flagship. Okay, fine. But she'd written a very interesting story, article about the dark forces that are at work within our society. And I was intrigued enough with what she wrote that I asked her if she'd come on our program and share her thoughts with our listeners tonight. So why don't you pick up the story from there, Dorothy?
Well, one of the things that struck me is that 40 years ago, when I first moved to Arizona for the last time, we had a few, a bare handful of palmists and astrologers who had to be out of the city limits. Now, of course, you have these occultists everywhere. You have them right in the city. You have The beautiful place called Sedona. Have you heard of it?
Oh, yes. We've been to Sedona. It's really a lovely spot. Those beautiful big red towering rocks all around it there?
Yes, and it's amazing to drive up there now and see the crystal shops.
It's really an occult center, isn't it?
It has become the occult center of Arizona, and it's just a shame.
Well, of course, the average person doesn't pay much attention to this sort of thing. They think the palm readers and, you know, the astrologers and these fortune tellers and the crystals, that's really all sort of for the crazies, you know. And there's some of these people who really believe in witchcraft and all of these strange things. They sort of shrug them off as it's just of no concern at all. There's people in the lunatic fringe. But are they the lunatic fringe?
They are very, very serious about what they're doing, and they have spread all over the country. In fact, all over the world. This is not a national thing. It's a global thing. The dark forces that are surrounding this planet are actually phenomenal, and they pop out everywhere. They pop out from places you'd expect to find them. Let's say the Caribbean voodoo culture, or the centers of, because there's a lot of Christianity down in the Caribbean. But there are these pockets, and then of course people kid me because my cousin lives in Louisiana, and my family line, the Cease line, comes from the Baton Rouge area, so I've gotten kidded a lot through my life about my voodoo wand. And
well, anyway, I don't have one. I never forget going to Bourbon Street in New Orleans, and there they have a voodoo shop, and of course, you know, you go in there, and you know, a lot of people just go in there, you know, they're sort of curious, you know, and they got these shrunken heads, you don't know if they're real, or maybe they really did come from people. But, you know, there's very, very strange lady who runs that shop. And a lot of people just sort of laugh at this sort of thing, and yet this is nothing to laugh at all. And, you know, we'll be back here in just a moment. Well, I guess we missed our break. I got so interested in talking to you that, but anyway, we'll pick that up in just a moment when we bring our stations back on board. But there really are these dark forces out there, and they are increasingly becoming more blatant, that they know that, of course, they have nothing to fear. Because nobody is going to speak out against them. And the average person really has no idea that there really is another dimension out there. And there are people who have learned to tap into that dimension. They do so certainly at the threat to their eternal salvation. But they are also having a tremendous impact on our children and our grandchildren.
Yes, they are. And what's happened is that the reason people consider this laughable now, as opposed to, let's say, 100 years ago, when the church was dominant, is that if you came from a blob of goo, or as one Christian fellow put it, from the goo to you by way of the zoo, and if we're just animals that are accidents in the universe, there's no creator, there are no absolutes, then what harm is anything? It's all just kind of a sad joke, and you get out of life what you can. Now that's exactly the attitude that's being conveyed, and I have a friend who has children in school, and these attitudes are conveyed in the schools. So if you don't learn the values at home, and you don't have a church going home, and I didn't, but they had the values of my era, and which were based on the church. So even though I didn't come from a Christian home, I became a Christian later when I began my own search for God, and my mother followed me. Praise the Lord for that. But I had a different value system under which I was brought up. But the children today, if there's nothing beyond and this life is all there is, and they come out of some slime and they're going back to dirt, then they might as well take what they can get.
Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. And after all, you know, what is life? If there's no God, why are you going to live 70 years and you're going to die and that's the end of it?
Oh, I hope not. Don't say that.
No, I don't believe that at all, of course. I believe that that all of us are going to spend our lives someplace. Question is, where are we going to spend eternity? No, I don't adopt these ideas, but this is the attitude that they're programming our children with, and hold that thought right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this my guest this evening is Dorothy Cease, and she's of course lives in Arizona, talking about how Sedona has become the occult center of Arizona, and there are all these people, a growing number of people, into astrology and fortune telling and the crystals and of course palm reading and all of these things, but of course there's far more to that. Because there is a growing influence of witchcraft in America today. Many of our largest Christian ministries told parents there is nothing wrong with having their children read the Harry Potter books, which were introducing our children into this idea of witchcraft, and that there is supernatural power out there they can tap into. And I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, there really is supernatural power out there. You can tap into it, but of course you do at the risk of your eternal soul. And until people understand there is another dimension, and the other side understands that dimension, and if you don't understand that dimension, you're not able to participate in this battle, this spiritual battle that's being waged against the hearts and souls and minds of the American people, and is specifically targeting our children today. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, it is a fair statement. And there are also, I read the other day, 1 million practitioners of Satan worship in America.
I'm not in the least bit surprised. In fact, I think if we start taking in the witches, when we start taking in all the other cult and the New Age organizations, why, I think we could probably give that a 10 or 20 times that amount. But I know, for instance, right in the White House itself, why, when Hillary Clinton was there, she would bring in Jean Houston to conjure up spirits. And, of course, we all sort of smile vaguely. But, of course, we remember that Nancy Reagan was deeply involved with astrology, and she was actually counseling her astrologers and going to them to get directions for her husband, who was also interested in astrology, but we don't want to mention that because we all love Ronald Reagan, because Ronald Reagan said everything we believe in, and he made us feel good about ourselves. But there was a strong, dark influence in the White House, bipartisan. In other words, it doesn't matter whether it's Democrat or Republican. Those dark forces are working in the White House today. And this is what really concerns me, how gullible the average Christian is. They don't even understand that there's a problem, that there's a spiritual problem, and it infects every aspect of our society.
Well, look what's happened to our churches, the big mega churches that have coffee bars and swimming pools and luxuries that are, well, you know, just all show, if I may put it that way, and I'm not saying that they do or don't preach the gospel. Some do, some don't. So you can't just throw them all into the whole bin. But there are enough of these mega churches, and I have one in mind here in my area, where there's no gospel, hard gospel. There's a social gospel being taught there. And this is useless.
But of course the people feel good about it. Nobody feels convicted. Nobody ever leaves the service feeling that they're a sinner saved by grace. They all feel good about themselves because they've changed the message of the gospel.
Yes, that's precisely what's been done. The people having itching ears, wanting them tickled. And they go there to feel good. They don't go there to seek the face of the Lord, as David put it. They don't go there to find the face of God and the Word of God. And we're not having people like, well, let's say Jonathan Edwards. He had a great revival in this country when it was really on a downhill slide morally. And we just don't have this coming through. Dwight Moody, the same thing. Billy Sunday. There's been just numbers of people who have, in this country, called upon Christian America to revive, to wake up, to get back their spiritual sense. That's not happening now, and it's scary.
I agree with you, but people have really forgotten the history of America. They don't realize that at the same time that the founding fathers, or so I should say the pilgrims came over, the pilgrims came over in the Mayflower, and in 1619 they landed at Plymouth in 1620, but there was a small contingent within their group that was from the dark side. And certainly they were reinforced so that they had a fairly good contingent here by 1640, about the time they were creating Harvard University. And by 1735, America had become a totally depraved nation. We were on the downhill side 120 years after the Pilgrims landed, 100 years after it created Harvard University, to train our ministers, to preach the Holy Gospel. Why, America had become a depraved nation. And then onto the scene comes Jonathan Edwards and John Wesley, and there's a first great spiritual awakening. And out of that experience, out of this men turning back to God, and not because they were preaching this warm, fuzzy gospel, oh, God loves everybody and everything's going to be great, they were preaching a sinner in the hands of an angry God. A sinner in the hands of an angry God. That was Jonathan Edwards' sermon, and he gave that same sermon over and over and over again all throughout the colonies, and men came to fear God. And of course, it was out of that first great awakening that came that spirit that led to the American Revolution and the establishment of a free society. And 100 years later, about 1840 or 1830, 1840, once again America had become a depraved nation, and the people had turned their back on God, and came the same second great awakening under Charles Finney. And then, of course, 1930 came around, and why, we haven't had another great awakening, and I fear that if we don't have another great awakening, then the America we know and love will soon become simply a remembrance of things past.
Yes, in fact, that's the intention. In 1776, while the Declaration of Independence was being penned on this side of the Atlantic, on the opposite side, Adam Weishaupt was putting together the Doctrine of the Illuminati.
Actually, in May 1st, 1776, for the Illuminati, July 4th, 1776, for the Declaration of Independence, when you look on the back of the dollar bill and you see the pyramid capped by this all-seeing eye and the numbers beneath the pyramid, 1776. Americans believe that or celebrates the Declaration of Independence. But the people from the dark side realize that, of course, refers to Adam Weishaupt and the Illuminati. So it has a dual meaning, one for the Christians and one for the occultists. But the trouble is, who had that emblem put on the back of the dollar bill? It wasn't the Christians. It was, of course, Henry Wallace, who was deeply involved with the occult. He was a Mason. He was into theosophy. He was a disciple of a man named Rorick. And he was basically into Satanism. And he was the one who had convinced Henry Morgenthau, who was the Secretary of the Treasury, to put that emblem on the back of the dollar bill. And every time you put out that dollar bill, understand, this is a satanic emblem there. They understand, the Satanists all across America understand, and they laugh at the foolish Christians who have no idea what's going on because their ministers won't tell them.
That's the problem. The ministers are not preaching what the people need to hear. They're preaching what the people want to hear. God loves everybody, and, you know, this old saw about the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. Sorry, that is not the gospel. The gospel is that all men are sinners, lost and bound for hell, until they are saved by grace through the blood of Jesus Christ.
Amen to that. You won't get any argument on that at all. Well, of course, what sort of response do you get from your from the article that you put up there on News with Views?
Well, a lot of people thanked me. And this happens because News with Views is one of the several places that publish my various articles. And I've been on the Internet about 5 or 6 years now, starting with my own site. Anyway, the atheists have more or less stopped hounding me. I think they thought they could stop me or shut me up if they just kept after me enough. And I don't shut up. I just keep on doing what I think the Lord wants me to do.
You know, I sort of laugh because I think of some of the things I get from my email. And these people will come in with these long dissertations on masonry and ask these ridiculous questions. And then, of course, I answer it, give them a great answer. Then they come back with all sorts of more information. And if I spent all the time answering all of those things and reading all the things they send me, I wouldn't have time to get anything accomplished at all, and I really think that's what they're trying to do, is keep me so busy with all these confusing things and all these sophistic arguments to totally neutralize this, because I really think that they fear that people are going to read your articles and my articles, and they're going to begin to understand what this is really all about. And the one thing the other side fears is that the American people will wake up.
Yes. If they ever do, they really are a sleeping tiger. We proved that in World War II when they rattled the cage of the sleeping tiger. And it's just the kind of thing that if the American people ever wake up and find out what's been done to them before the tanks are in the streets, then we could have a real revolution in our hands. The power is with the numbers of the people. But the reason they're not using their power is that they're deceived and they're blind to what's happening.
And I agree with you totally, and I think that our job, of course, yours and mine and that of anybody else who really cares, is to become involved and, of course, to take advantage of what we have. Certainly, we have the Internet. We've never had that before. Newswithviews.com is a wonderful site to get information on, is it? And, of course, other sites will pick up those articles and have them up on their websites. And, of course, I'd go to World Affairs Brief every morning to go through and find out what's going on. And they've already reviewed what's on the News with Views website, and they'll post it there. And I think they had your article posted there as well, Dorothy. And so that's how I picked it up. We'll be back here in just a moment here with our special guest today, Dorothy Sees, and welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dorothy Sees, and we're talking about the articles he's written about the dark side, these dark occult influences, which are not imaginary. They're very real in our society. They permeate every aspect of everything going on. They're in our certainly in our churches. They're within our schools. They're within the environmental movement. They're within the movies. They're in television. They're every aspect, every place we look. We see references to it, and most people, it goes right over the top of their head because they don't understand that there really is another dimension there. So you want to pick up and discuss some of your thoughts of what people can do to help us get this word out?
I wish I knew more to do. The Internet writers are doing all they can. We keep on. And believe me, at times it's sort of like, if people are going to be that oblivious to what's going on, there's no hope for it. You know, you just want to throw up your hands and go to an island somewhere and enjoy yourself.
But, of course, there is no island to go to. America falls. The whole world falls. The battle for the survival of humankind is here. Now, I admit that it's God's battle, but we're called to be involved. And the idea that we're to sit back and do nothing and say it's all in God's hands, I think that I would never want to have to stand before God and say, well, I didn't get involved because I thought it was all up to you.
That's exactly why we keep on. Now, there are Internet writers who are very solid conservatives who are not Christian. But the Christian Internet writers who are conservative, and I don't see how you could be anything but conservative, considering what the liberals believe. But the Internet writers keep on pounding simply because they feel an obligation to do what they can, and that is to keep on getting the message out. Now, Isaiah wound up being, you know, sawed in half for his efforts. But he still did what the Lord commissioned him to do. And it's that way with God's people. They have a job to do. And if they won't do it, they'll have to account for it.
And I agree with you totally. I think that we have really many more outlets than we ever did before. When I got started in this battle some 43 years ago now, looking back over those years, why, we didn't have an internet. We didn't have any means of reaching people. The only thing we could do was put together little books and hand those out and try to get people to buy them. And even if they did buy them, they wouldn't read them because people really far rather watch television. Or listen to talk radio, and talk radio really became a major force about 1963 or 1964. And it was that time I really became intrigued with the idea of talk radio. And I always sort of dreamed that someday, maybe when I retired from medicine, I would be able to have a talk radio program of my own and be able to reach people. And, of course, when you have the button, why, you have a tremendous advantage. But, of course, a good person doesn't necessarily use that button. He tries to carry on an intelligent conversation with the people that are out there. But I debated some of the best talk show hosts in the United States over a period of many years. And then, of course, as I approached the time of my retirement, an amazing series of events came together, and suddenly I had a radio studio in my own home, and I had a radio station of which somebody else built for me and largely financed. Things don't just sort of happen like that by accident. I think they happen by intent. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Dorothy Cease, and we're talking about the dark forces, which are so prevalent in society today and are so little understood by people across America. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. And, of course, Dorothy's articles are up on the Internet. Are they on your website, Dorothy?
Yes. There's a huge archive on my website of articles that I've written. The latest ones are up there. I post to Flagship, which is just how I call my site. I post to that first, and then I send around to the editors that I know. And if they want to, any particular article, they know they're free to use it.
Well, I think that's great, and I'm so glad that you do and that you're writing and getting the information out. But what we, Chris, I still believe that radio is the best because, firstly, we're not reaching exactly the same audience. We're reaching a different audience. And so I certainly put my articles up on the Internet, too. But then, of course, I love to get people like you on our program to sort of develop these ideas. That there is another dimension. I'll never forget that I was on a nationwide radio program, or actually nationwide television program. It was called Unscrewed. You probably have never heard of it.
No.
It is actually watched by millions of young people, the avant-garde, of course, into the computers, these are the people who think entirely differently than you and I would, us old-fashioned folks. I think there are very, very few Christians who would watch the program, but I had the opportunity of spending, maybe 5 or 6 minutes there, my 5 or 6 minutes of fame. But we got a chance, of course, to get into the occult, into witchcraft, into Luciferianism, into the emblem on the back of the dollar bill, and into these dark spiritual forces that are out there. Well, I got an awful lot of email, and one of the articles I got, one of the letters I got was from a witch. And she was furious with me. And she said, I want you to know that we are not Luciferian. Well, I didn't mean that witches were Luciferian. I don't believe that they are at all. I think that they certainly are delving into the same forces that the Luciferians are. But the average witch is not a Luciferian. And this witch wrote to me, and she said, you know, we're really very nice people. I mean, they're white witches and they're black witches, but most of us are white witches, and we want to do good. And the reason we conjure up spells is so that we can access beings from another dimension. So we can access beings from another dimension. She had no idea who these beings were or what that other dimension represented, but she really felt that she was going to be able to tap into this supernatural force by accessing these beings. What do you say to somebody who has no idea at all about the spiritual battle they're involved in and they're on the wrong side?
Well, you know, I'm not a confrontational person face-to-face at all. What I have to say, I say in my articles, and the reason is I have a tendency, like some people do, to think of the perfect answer 2 hours later.
But you can't do that when you're on talk radio, but I have the same problem.
But, you know, the thing is that if I happen to run into somebody like that, I would probably ask them, what kind of forces do you think these are? Are they? How do you know they're good? Do you know what God says about them? I mean, if you've got an unseen world, you must have a creator. I don't know. I would just sort of be probing around until I hit a nerve.
You know, there was a most amazing interview on 60 Minutes about 3 weeks ago. It was with Bob Dylan, who, of course, is, you know, pretty far out as far as his music was concerned, but he was talking about his lyrics that he wrote 30 years ago. And he said, you know, I don't know where those lyrics came from. I can't do it anymore, but those lyrics just came out of nowhere. And they were wonderful lyrics, but I didn't write them. They just sort of came to me out of nowhere. And then, of course, he was talking about his life and, you know, tragic life and divorces. And then the interviewer on 60 Minutes says, well, why are you still doing this? Why are you still on tour all the time? You've been at this for so many years. Aren't you tired? And he said, oh, yes, but I have an agreement. And the man who was questioning him said, well, could I ask you who the agreement is, who you have the agreement with? And Dylan, without any emotion, said, well, it's with the fellow who runs things here on Earth, that being from the other dimension. Well, of course, he was really talking about Satan.
No, Satan is God of this world.
Of course he is. The fellow who runs things here from another dimension, he didn't talk about God. He wasn't talking about an agreement with God. He was talking about the agreement with Satan. And so many of the people who are into music have sold their souls to the devil. They know exactly what they've done, and they've got great power. They've got great prosperity. They've had sex and drugs and a wonderful, exciting time, but they're going to spend eternity with hell. And most of them have no idea what they're into.
Well, I don't. Well,
this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Dorothy Cease, and we're talking about her articles that he's been writing on the Internet about the prevalence of the dark side and the dark forces that permeate every aspect of our lives today. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And, of course, we would welcome your calls if you have a question, a comment. Maybe you disagree. Maybe you think that there's nothing to the crystals. Or maybe you believe that the crystals are going to help you to be better able to function in your society. There are an awful lot of people out there who wear the crystals, who feel that there's energy in the crystals. And I fear that they're right, but where that energy is coming from is where we would disagree. So why don't you sort of pick up on your thoughts on that sort of thing, Dorothy?
Well, one of the things that disturbed me so much is to see what was once a nation where our entire morality, our standards, I mean, certainly this was not a nation full of nothing but Christians. It never has been. It was settled by a colony. As you said, even that group of colonists had people with the dark side. We have dark side emblems on our money. But the basis for our law, our morality, and generally the standards by which we lived and taught the children and produced a more law-abiding society came out of the Bible. And now the Bible is under severe attack, and nobody can really explain why. Now, at the inauguration yesterday, you heard about God, you saw the Bible, people were holding it for the various office holders, and yet, if a child brings that book to school, there are cases after cases where they're sent home, expelled, reprimanded, parents called in. You can't do that. It's unconstitutional. Well, there's no such thing. I mean, the only thing that they have is a two-clause statement in the First Amendment, that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, nor prohibit the free exercise thereof. And what we've had done since...
Hold that thought right there, and we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Dorothy Cease, and of course we're talking about what's happening, the dark side, the influence of the dark side that's permeating every aspect of our society. Our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And of course the website where you can get the Dorothy's articles is www.tech.com.au/flagship. That's tech.com.au/flagship. Go ahead, Dorothy.
One of the things that disturbs me is the fact that materialism has distracted so many people, and science has replaced God as the thing to which people are looking for the answers. Back 100 years ago, people had a general attitude of awareness towards their mortality. And now, of course, you have these people wanting to be frozen or whatever. You have a fighting of this mortality. I see dozens of commercials on what television I do watch. And those are all toward looking more youthful, feeling more youthful. Youth, youth, youth. It's a youth cult thing. People don't want to age. And the feeling is that if you don't hang on to your youth and all this, you're going to lose everything because there's nothing beyond. Now, that's the exact reverse of the way my grandmother, who was born in 1878, felt. And she looked forward to the kingdom of God.
And I think that that was, of course, the belief of many of our founding fathers. They knew we were here for a time on earth, but they looked forward to spending eternity with our Lord. Well, let's go to Will, who's calling us from Missouri. Hi, Will. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan and Dorothy. I have a question for you in regards to the origin and the scope and the perhaps the purpose of a program that's called the Course of Miracles or the Course in Miracles,
right,
which reportedly, according to the source that I've heard, was channeled by Jesus and couched in aphorisms and syllogism and allegory and whatnot. Could you explain that to me?
I've never heard of it.
Well, I can. I can't explain it because I'm not an expert on it, but certainly Warren Smith, who we've had as a guest here a number of times, was actually into the Course of Miracles. A man named Sapolsky, I believe it was, had written extensively about it and introduced Warren Smith into it, and it is basically an occult organization. The occult beliefs has nothing to do with Christianity. The Christ that they talk of in A Course in Miracles is not the Christ of the Bible. And if you'd like, of course, we did an interview with Warren Smith within the last two nights, I think it was, probably a Tuesday or Wednesday this week. You could get that full interview with him where he talks extensively about the Course in Miracles and how it is basically introducing you to a counterfeit Christ.
Is there a book that goes along with that, Dr. Stan?
No, not necessarily. Of course, he was really talking about the purpose-driven church, which, of course, and he has a book on that, but not necessarily on A Course in Miracles, although if you'd like to call me off the air, I can put you in touch with Warren, and he probably, well, he knows so much about this, because he came out of the occult, he became a born-again Christian. He's written a couple of wonderful books, one, of course, on the counterfeit Christ, and then, of course, his latest book, The Seed on Purpose, an expose of the purpose-driven church.
And that would be at your office on Monday?
Right, or you can just call at our 800 number, leave your number, and I'll call you back and get in touch with you. But let me point out that there's a very close relationship between this fellow Sapolsky, and I'm probably mispronouncing his name, but and, of course, Robert Schuller and this whole purpose-driven church movement. And this is, of course, to take people away from the true gospel into this false gospel. And they're doing a great job of it.
Yes. Thank you very much.
God bless, and thanks very much. Okay, that was Will calling from Missouri. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. I'm sorry. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we're basically talking about the occult influence in our society today. And incidentally, that interview with Bob Dylan, you can actually get the complete text of that from CBS, from 60 Minutes, and that's exactly what I did. I wanted, listening to that interview with Bob Dylan's talking about how the reason he's doing what he's doing is because, of course, he had an agreement. And when he was asked who the agreement was, he said, well, with a fellow who runs things here on Earth, a fellow from another dimension. And he was talking about Satan, of course. Anyway, it's a fascinating interview. You can get that from 60 Minutes. Of course, we do have the complete text of that. But understand, so many of the people who are into rock and roll, into this music, which we're bringing into our churches, have sold their souls to the devil. And if you have not yet seen the videos, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour versions of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. They are available through Radio Liberty, as well as a number of the other items. That's the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour versions of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. Everyone who is concerned about their children or grandchildren or what's happening to our society today needs to see these films. I think they're one of the most powerful things we have. That and the Megiddo films, which videos or DVDs we have, really help you to understand the true spiritual nature of the battle. Well, we've got Bart with us from Monterey. Hi, Bart. How are you doing?
Fine, sir. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. I witnessed something on the television a couple of nights ago that was very sobering. It was very shocking, and it reminded me very much of the research that you've done with rock and roll, and it was this. I briefly checked in on the TV to see what was being shown on the screen, and it was a video of the beginning of a concert by a very, very famous band in America now by the name of Motley Crue. and this band, there's no young person in this country who has not heard of this band. They are huge. Now, it's not uncommon for the satanic symbology to be intermingled around the world of rock and roll music here and there, but I saw something that was more blatant. The thing that makes it noteworthy is it was more blatant than anything I had ever seen. They were on stage, and it was a lit stage. They were performing, and on either side of them, to the right and to the left, was a gigantic, brightly illuminated pentagram. Huge. And it was the most blatant satanic symbology that I have ever witnessed, and I'm always watching for this stuff. And it immediately reminded me of the research that you had done into this. And it also, the thing it left me with, Stan, was this. What it's saying to the world is that they're now taking us to the next level of the satanic influence.
I think you're absolutely right, Bart. The trouble is that you would see that because, of course, you're aware of it. The average person would see it, and they hide these symbols in plain sight, and the average person is totally unaware. It's like the occult symbol on the back of the dollar bill, or the occult symbol on the right lower quadrant of the television screen when you're watching CBS. That symbol of the eye there is an ancient satanic symbol. They put it, they're so blatant, they put it right on your television screen. It's hidden in plain sight, and anybody who has not yet read Dr. Kathy Byrne's book, Masonic and Occult Symbols. That's Masonic and Occult Symbols. We carry the book. There are over 700 of them there. It's a great, very important book. And suddenly you're going to begin to recognize that you're completely surrounded by these symbols. The World Future Society that has on it people like Marie Strong and Robert McNamara and Barbara Hubbard. Their logo, until we began talking about it, was a circle with three sixes in it. You'd be amazed at how many three sixes there are. The symbol of the Trilateral Commission, the symbol of the Aquarian Conspiracy on the front of Marilyn Ferguson's book. You'll see those intertwined sixes over and over again, and most people have no idea. Anything else you wanted to say, Bart?
Just a closing comment that this all this is very hair-raising to experience, and I just feel honored that God has allowed me to be alive in this world at this time.
Amen.
And
Dorothy,
thank you.
Dorothy, what would you like to say?
Well, one of the things that I've done is to compile some of the earlier articles that I have in a book called The Pirates of Liberty.
Oh, that's your book. I just got that today.
Oh, okay. That's my book. And I have enough material on my website, on my archive, on my hard drive, if it doesn't blow, to put together about two more that size.
All right, fine. Don't make them too large, because, you know, some people, some of my friends are at these wonderful books. You know, they're 12,000 pages. Nobody's going to read them. You know, you got to have something that's short. And then, of course, if you, for a reference book, these others are wonderful, but the average person today does not have that time or the ability to maintain their attention for that period of time.
No, and that's why all the articles are short.
And that's one of the beauties of certainly newswithviews.com or World Affairs Brief or any of these. It's quick. You can get the information. And then, of course, if you want to, of course, do the detailed work, why, of course, you get one of those 12,000-page books. Okay, let's go to Larry, who's calling us from Maine. Is that Gardner, Maine, Larry?
Yeah, I'm not in Gardner, Maine. I'm right now. I'm driving truck, and I'm listening to you on a radio station somewhere. I'm just in Albany right now.
All right, fine. Well, of course, you're in our Albany station for the evening. Then it's good to hear from you.
Yes, good. I've been listening to your show here, and really interesting. I've been listening to a lot of talk shows lately, and I don't know, for the past 6 months now, me and my family have been going to church and really getting into it, and we enjoy it. It's, you know, fulfilling. But I noticed, like, my daughter, she's 12. She doesn't get into it, and I got to listen to things like Harry Potter.
You got to get her out of government schools, and you got to get her at homeschooling or someplace where she's going to be reared in the way that God would have her, because she doesn't stand a chance in government schools.
Oh, I know, and I see this, and we made her stay back this year, and because she wasn't doing good in the grades, and we're trying to get the teachers to communicate with us, it doesn't work, and she's going through the same thing this year. I'm just, you know, I'm looking at this whole thing. Like I said, I've been listening to talk radio for quite a while now, and between what you're saying, what can we do about it? You know, because I mean, I'm hearing a lot of talk about it, and I'm even trying to think, how do you wake people up to the fact of what's going on? And, you know, to get something started.
All right, fine, Dorothy. How would you respond to Larry, who's up there in Albany, New York, listening to us up there on our local outlet?
Well, of course, that's the most frequently asked question I get. How do we do something about it, one-on-one? If you can email the articles around. I get people who tell me that they like this or that article that I've written, and they email them to their friends. And some of their friends don't believe them, and some of them said, oh, that's what's going on. So we have various ways of communicating now very rapidly that we didn't have before. So you talk to people and just with kind of innocent questions, see if they have an open mind or not. If they do and they're questioning what's going on, you have a wide open door. And you can lead them to maybe even getting a computer if they don't have one. Most people do now. And taking them to these various websites and news magazines, e-zines, that are on the air or on the Internet, and it are exposing. Now, there are good sites and there are bad ones, and it's up to people to find out which are which. News with Views is excellent. There are several others that are extremely good. And they reveal what's going on. Right now, under people's noses, as Dr. Stan says, hidden in plain sight. And
you know,
it's a matter of those who know communicating with those who don't know.
Larry, are you an evangelical Christian?
Yes, I am.
All right, we basically put together a 10-point program, and of course the first one was have a personal relationship with the Lord, because you can't get into this battle unless you understand it's a spiritual battle, and if you try to fight these forces, why, you'll be destroyed. But if you have the blood of Jesus Christ for protection, then of course you can take a stand against the wiles of the devil, but otherwise we can't do this on our own. Number two is you need to understand the foundations of our freedom, which is basically that America was a unique nation. It was founded by Christians on Christian principles, and everybody for 150 years knew America was a Christian nation. Not that everybody was a Christian, but that our laws were based on Christianity, and the precepts of this country were based upon the fact that freedom came from God, and the only way that you could have a free society is if you had people who were answerable to God rather than to government. So then, of course, the third thing is to understand what the wicked people are doing. And if you haven't yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You need to read it. You need to read it about five times or see the video or the audio tape. Or anyway, in your truck, you can play the audio tape over. You just get the audio tape if you want to. It'll give you the story and the background and the understanding of how this whole incredible story fits together. And then, of course, then your job is, of course, to help educate others. And if you can get them to listen to our Internet programs, we're on the Internet, you can listen 5 hours a day and not get anything accomplished, or listen to the shortwave 4 hours a day, and you can listen to the shortwave even in your truck. If you can get a shortwave receiver and get the aerial outside of the car 4 hours a day, we do shortwave 5 hours a day on the Internet. Then once you have the information, and we'll get it from all different sources, then your job is to get other people educated and understanding. Only when the majority of the American people understand, we're involved not in a political or ideological battle, but in a spiritual battle, being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield. When the majority of the American people really understand what's going on, and they're going to quit playing this foolish game of voting for the Republicans and Democrats, both of whom are controlled by the same people, at that point, we're going to be able to bring America back to what it was, the America that you and I love and cherish.
Well, we got to do something because, the comments earlier, your guest, I'm sorry, I'm not good at remembering names, but you're talking about all these occults and these things are popping up all over the place. I used to work in the prison in Maine as a correctional officer for, like, years. And, of course, there, you know, they have worship services, but they have other worship services, too. Wiccans, pagans, some weird stuff I had never seen before.
I know they do. Unfortunately, they have Satanists right there in our military. They have them work at the highest levels of the government. I believe they're sometimes working right in the White House. Our job is to get people to understand, because we're the majority, and of course, if this country were worth saving, God will intervene. But remember, don't get discouraged. This is God's battle. We're not called to win. We're called to do our best. Hey, we're going to have to run. Thanks so much for listening, and look forward to hearing from you again.
Thank you.
Good night. God bless. Okay, we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this program with Dorothy Cease. Remember, it's tech.com.au/flagship. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Dorothy Cease from Sedona. She's from Arizona, but this is close to Sedona. Sedona is in Arizona and really is an occult center. Dorothy, we've got about 2.5 minutes for you to wrap up the program. What message do you want to leave with our listeners tonight?
Well, the message I'd like to leave is the same one that I gave to the other fellow who called. And that is, I'm asked so often, what can we do about it? We can ferret out the beliefs of the people who are around us and try to correct them. Now, there are many who are not going to listen, but there will be some who do. And when those people listen and believe, they'll pass it on too. And that's why I and all my comrades who are fellow internet writers, the colleagues, on the internet, keep doing what we're doing. And that is, we just we have to believe, we do believe, that we can make a difference.
And I think we can make a difference, and I think we are making a difference, and I think that the awareness, the level of awareness is growing all across America. And I think that, you know, as things get worse and worse, and I have no question they're going to get worse, they're going to get worse morally, they're going to get worse legally, they're going to get worse certainly as financially, because I think we're on the edge of a financial precipice and are ready to drop over. But don't despair. These are the best things in many ways that can happen, because it's going to get people's attention. And as the war drags on, and it's going to drag on in one form or another, and I believe there's going to be more and more of our young people are going to die senselessly overseas. And I hate to think of it, but on the other hand, somehow we have to be able to reach the people, and only when things really get bad to begin people looking for answers, and they're not going to find it in politics, and they're not going to find it in television, and they're not going to find it in the books, they're going to find it in one book, and that is the Holy Scriptures. And that's going to begin to answer all their questions. And so our whole job has to be to aim people in that direction, don't you believe?
Absolutely. There is only one answer, and that is the true and living God.
And a personal relationship with Him, and the only way it's going to come about is when you get down on your knees and ask Him to come into your life. And I did that. Of course, it was pretty hard when you got a Phi Beta Kappa key and all these degrees, and you're a successful physician, to get down on your knees with a minister and ask God to come into your life. But I can honestly say that when it happens, why, your whole life changes, and it changes forever. Okay. Dorothy, God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure. Hope we can get you on again sometime, and I'll have to look at that Pirates of Liberty you sent me.
All right. Thank you.
Good night, and God bless you.
God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here this evening, and of course, we've been talking about the dark side, and it's not imaginary, it's real. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, why, you need to. It's a good overview of what's going on. Now, are there better books out there? Sure, there are lots better books, but there's nothing that gives you the overview that you're going to get in this book, and it's easy to read. It'll give you the references to all the other books you need. And again, the telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. You either get the book, or you get the book, the video, or you get the book and the video and the audio tape as the Brotherhood of Darkness special. Just get the audio tape, get ever what you want to, but get the information and listen to it. I've had people call and told me they've seen the video 7 times, 8 times, because they learn something every time. And our job is to get you educated so you can begin to educate others, and you can understand the spiritual nature of the battle we're engaged in. Now, President Bush yesterday talked about this fire that they were working with, this fire in the minds of men. Well, of course, he's quoting from a book written by James H. Billington called Fire in the Minds of Men. And Billington's referring to an article, a book that was written by Dostoevsky called The Possessed. That's The Possessed. And, of course, it was about the demonic forces working within the world, bringing about the world revolution. We carry the book Fire in the Minds of Men. We think it's a very important book to understand the background of the occult movement that brought about the great revolutions of the last, the 18th and 19th century. And if you honestly believe what they teach us in school, that the revolutionary ferment that led to the to the French Revolution and the Russian Revolution had anything to do with the Enlightenment, then you don't understand. James H. Billington's a brilliant scholar. I don't believe with his philosophy, but I don't question his scholarship. And he points out this all comes out of the occult and out of secret societies. And who is James H. Billington? Well, he's the former director of the Smithsonian Institute. He is the Librarian of Congress. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. One of the smartest people I've ever read, and I recommend his book to you, Fire in the Minds of Men. We carry that. We think it's a very important book. And then, of course, have other books about the spiritual warfare, about alien intervention. What does alien intervention have to do with anything? I mean, do I really believe in UFOs? I believe in UFOs. I believe in little gray men, but I believe they're all demonic spirits, demonic manifestations, just as many of the crop circles are, and they keep want you to think they're all fraudulent. I believe that, of course, the cattle mutilation, it's all part of the demonic manifestations. They surround us every day, and they hide them in plain sight. And then, of course, they do nothing but intentionally confuse us. Alien Intervention is a fascinating book we carry, and we recommend that to you. And of course, Spirits of Warfare, the book The Trojan Horse in America by Samantha Smith. So many books we carry. Certainly The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. What's the rainbow? Why, it's the bridge, of course. If you read the occult literature, you'll hear the reference to the bridge. The rainbow is the bridge, which, of course, takes from our reality into the other reality. And again, they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a free copy of our November newsletter, it'll take you into the background of how they're poisoning our children's minds. They're destroying their minds with water fluoridation, because when they fluoridate your water, 9 times out of 10 they put in lead and arsenic and cadmium and polonium 20, and you say, why are they putting lead in there? Why, very simply, they know what they're doing, they just don't want you to know. And it was certainly Bertrand Russell in his book The Impact of Science on Society who said, by diet and injections and injunctions we'll be able to mold the character of the people. And then he talked about how we would have to breed people for cannon fodder, and how we would have two levels, one the elite, the other, and they'd be so different you wouldn't be able to associate them at all. Ladies and gentlemen, pray for America. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. America is under siege today. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty till Monday. May the Lord be with you.